Welcome to the Costume Plot.
I'm JoJo Siu.
And I'm Sarah Tim. We're professional designers with a passion for costume design and the performing arts. Our podcast does contain spoilers. Accompanying slideshows for each movie are linked in the episode description.
We hope you'll join us every other week as we delve into the wonderful world of costume design in the Costume Plot. Hello, woo! And welcome back.
Here we are again.
Yahoo!
Exciting. We hope that you enjoyed the last episode, which we literally just recorded.
Just a 10-minute break before our next one.
Yeah. It's so weird to, like, pretend like it hasn't, like, you're not doing the
back yet. You know, like. We're now 2 weeks away.
Yeah.
Into the future.
What a great 2 weeks that was in between.
I know. I'm wondering what I'll think when I look back on what I did. Very trippy. All right.
Okay.
So I'm really excited. This week's episode, we are going in a very different direction. We are going back to TV this episode, so mm-hmm. I'm excited. But we're actually going to cover some Korean TV shows, or I should say K-dramas. I was actually really excited to cover some Squid Game, but I decided to cover something else. So
yeah, so I was going to cover Squid Game.
So I'm excited, but these are both really fun. Interestingly enough, my like first foray into K-dramas was in college because I had only Korean friends, or I should say mostly Korean friends. So of course they were introducing me to all of them. But yes, it's been really cool seeing so many of them pop up on Netflix because most of them are available there now. Or done by Netflix now, I should say.
Yeah, totally.
So for those of you who are not accustomed to Korean dramas, everything is over-exaggerated.
Yeah.
Everything's over-exaggerated, or like the stakes are super extreme, or mm-hmm. something is always like horribly wrong, or someone has like a horrible, tragic accident and they have to redeem themselves. So yes, you will see that theme a lot with both of our episodes, I believe. So I am covering a show called Mystic Pop-Up Bar.
Okay.
It's very, awesome. I know. It's actually very fun. A friend introduced it to me. And it's very like fantasy meets afterlife. I mean, both of those are fantasy, I guess. But yes, and I am covering sort of like an episode right in the middle of the series, so there will definitely be spoilers. I apologize, and I will do my best to try and explain what happens in this episode because there's a lot. I am covering episode 7, and it was directed by, I'm going to mess all of these names up, but it's Changgun Jun, I think is his name. He was actually nominated for another show he did for best new director, called My Precious You, which I have not seen, but apparently he was nominated for that one. And then he also did another show called Sabotage City. That was his most recent one in 2021.
Okay.
I totally forgot to look up the costume designer for this, so
oops.
My apologies. I will see if I can look that up right now, actually. I was just so curious about finding all the images of this episode because there's a lot of really fun costumes in this one. Let's see. They do not even have it listed on here.
What?
That's nuts. No wonder I couldn't find it. Let me see. Yeah, because it just has the visual effects team and they don't have...
That's so weird.
Yeah, it's literally not on here. It just says visual effects, and then they have the editorial department. All right. Well, sorry, fans. No designer is credited for this, which is very sad to me.
I just Googled, and it didn't automatically come up with anybody's name. That's so sad. Like, somebody did it.
Let's see. And part of me also wonders if there was, like, maybe a stylist for this, because there are a lot of traditional, what they call hanboks, which is the traditional Korean garment.
Yeah.
They did some really, really cool contemporary, like, twist versions of it, or there's a lot of really contemporary patterns in her hanboks. Or it was paired with very modern, like, cardigans and skirts. So they did a really good mix match, which is why I'm very sad that there isn't a designer credited to this.
Yeah.
But let's dive right in. So this episode, just to give you a little bit of background, the main character is Wulju, and she is essentially a 500-year-old ancient ghost, essentially.
Amazing.
She obviously doesn't look ancient, but the idea is that when she was younger, she hung herself on a tree because she was separated from her love and was, she might have been killed. It's been a while since I've watched this. Either she was killed or someone in her family was killed, and so she hung herself on this tree, praying that she would be reunited and reborn to seek revenge, essentially.
Hmm.
So there's, like, little flashbacks here and there going back to her life in the palace, because she was actually She fell in love with the crown prince. So the crown prince is who she's in love with, but I think she came from a sort of middle to lower class family that kind of worked with the prince. So there were a lot of other issues, but there was an evil entity at the time who basically spread fire in her mother's apartment. And so her mother actually passed. So this is part of the reason why she ended up hanging herself on this tree. Mm. However, because she committed suicide, and also I think she hung herself on a very ancient sacred tree, there was a lot, like several thousands of souls that she burned this tree for, were all basically stuck and kind of sent, I want to say sent to hell, something like that.
Oh.
So she ends up, she's given the choice to, within a month, she has to redeem 100,000 souls in order to not be sent to hell.
Oh.
And so that's kind of her punishment.
Okay.
And so her trying to avoid going to hell means that she's basically, they set up what they call a pop-up bar, and it's basically just a red tent in the middle of a Korean center.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically feeds them this very special elixir drink where she's able to have them fall asleep and go into their dreams and help them essentially fulfill their dream or their regrets, that kind of thing. In the process of that, it's actually really fun. But she has a partner who works at this bar with her. He's just someone who also is kind of, he's sort of like chief of police in the underworld, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he ends up befriending her. They end up running this bar together. And so for a long period of time, he's helping her basically get her 100,000 souls. And you see a little counter at their pop-up bar of, like, how many souls she's... And at this point, I think she's done about 999,995. So she's got, like, four left.
Yeah.
Or five left. They end up meeting this other character who is just an everyday, like, not a ghost at all, just a Korean bystander. He ends up falling into this... somehow ending up in this tent. And he's basically cursed with, sounds really weird, but every time he touches someone, they automatically feel the need to share their life story with him.
Oh.
So basically he feels like he can never touch people or be intimate with people because they just want to share and spill everything about themselves to him. And he doesn't always want that.
Yeah.
So of course he ends up in this tent and like finds out what they're doing and ends up helping them. So at this point he's kind of on their team because he helps open up people who don't normally open up in order to help them get their souls faster. Because then mm-hmm. they talk about their regrets and their life dreams that they never achieved. The other character that's important in this is, of course, Kang Bae is the guy who basically can't touch anybody. He falls in love with this girl who ends up working at the same grocery store he works at. And she has the opposite problem because every time she touches someone, she repels them. So basically she grows up her entire life not being able to fall in love because all the guys that she touches are all either scared of her or repelled by her for whatever reason. So of course, when they touch each other, she feels nothing and has no desire to share anything with him. And mm-hmm. vice versa, he doesn't feel the need to get repelled. So they're a very interesting match. But this episode, they are in a dance competition.
Of course they are, because why wouldn't they?
And so they're like, they basically pair up and it's like a, basically the head or chair of the grocery store that he works at is giving like a special, like, I'll make any of your wishes come true if you win this dance. So they end up trying to win this dance because they're also trying to chase a spirit who has now possessed the chairman. So it's a lot happening at once.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah. I digress. That's only some of the story, and I will try and get to the rest of it as we go through costumes.
That is, it's rich, rich with story.
Cool. So let me go ahead and share screen.
Cool.
Oh gosh, there's so many characters too. It's like we really couldn't get through every single one of them in one episode. But
of course,
I will try and speed through quickly. So this first one, in this episode, of course, the pop-up bar gets suspended because she tries to help a lady adopt a child in the previous episode, and then it causes a lot of problems because she basically the mom wanted children, couldn't have children, and there's, I guess, a wish fairy, for lack of a better term, who basically can give what's the right word? She can give the power of conceiving to, or the powerful wish of conceiving to these mothers. And so, of course, because she wants so much to help this mother, because she also wants children, Woju ends up stealing one of these dreams. And so in doing so, she ends up getting in trouble. And so now she's meeting up with kind of like the manager of her punishment, who, let me see if I can get this name right. She's considered the Yomra Daiwang. Basically kind of the head of hell, for lack of a better term. But I love that she's always in these really beautiful, like, power suits. And it's always double-breasted. So she's either in black or in red every time we see her this episode. And I just love the styling for this. There's not really much I have to say about this, except that it's just a really good-looking suit on her. And there's, like, funny bits where she kind of, like, makes a mistake, and the reason why they have to chase this spirit who possesses the chairman is because she made a mistake and let the guy go. Somehow, when people die, they enter a place where they get judged, and, like, they basically come before a panel, and the panel decides who they get reborn as based on what they've done in life. And then they go into what they call the shower of oblivion, where it erases all their memories before they're reborn. And of course, she unplugs the shower of oblivion at some point to charge her phone. And so the one spirit gets away.
Charge her phone.
Long story. But anyway, so I wanted to focus on that first. And then in contrast, because, of course, Woju, so this is Woju, our main female lead, because she has to, or because she's messed up the last episode, because she basically stole this conceiving dream, she gets punished by having to do, like, 100 hours of, like, community service, but in the afterlife. So she basically has to help the panel, like, take notes. So I love, most of the next couple of pictures are just her different handbooks, because there's so many, like, she's wearing multiple in one episode. And I just wanted to see how, like, I just wanted to showcase how pretty they all are, because they're all very different, but they're all incredibly beautiful. And the nice thing is, like, she's always in these, like, beautiful Korean traditional hanboks, or, like, a mix mash of that plus contemporary. And then her partner, Chief Gui, he's always in, like, very contemporary Korean streetwear. So that's a lot of the next couple of pictures. So these are just, a fan basically took all of these, and these are just some of the pictures that are in this episode. Most of these are from, I think these three on the left are actually from this episode. The other two are from other episodes. But you can see just the different varieties of the different hanboks that she has. And then the fact that she's just next to him in, like, a contemporary men's suit. I just love that contrast, which happens a lot in this season.
I love that.
Right, in this show. So this was a quick flashback, and I wanted to pull this up just because it does show, again, the traditional ancient Korean kind of royal wear. And, like, not only the outfits, but also what the hair would have looked like. So this is actually Woju when she's younger. She falls in love with the crown prince, of course. And this is the crown prince when he's younger as well. They end up getting separated, and so they're not able to find each other before she you know, burns up the tree. So, of course, you kind of find out, spoiler alert, that Wolju and her partner, Chief Hui, so he's actually the crown prince, reincarnated, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And, of course, she doesn't realize that he's there watching over her the entire time. And you don't really find out that he's the crown prince until much later on. So it's kind of this, like, very touching love story of him kind of traveling all these times and years just to find her.
Aww.
But I love the very, like, it's very, like, blue is boy and purple and pink is girl.
A little bit,
but
yeah.
I do love that separation of the two. okay. So then this is who we call the department head, and his name is Yom, and he's kind of... It sounds weird to say, but he's almost like the god of heaven, whatever you want to call it. So they, of course, put him all in white. And he's come to Earth because he understands and knows who Wolju is. Like, he knows her past. He knows why she's here. He knows why she has to collect those 100,000 souls. But he's also on Earth to try and find, like, there's been a disturbance in the... I guess, everyday world. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to kind of figure out, he's sort of a detective that's trying to figure out what's happening. And of course, you find out that it's actually his son, I believe, who's sort of the evil spirit that's trying to kill Wolju, because he also tried to kill her back in ancient Korea. So he's kind of trying to clean up loose ends. But I do love that they put him in this, like, bright white. And he's mostly wearing all white whenever he's in his god character. And then whenever he visits Wolju in the pop-up tent, he's always wearing, like, civilian clothes. And it's always in some sort of black or darker color so that he can blend in.
Yeah.
So I love that they kind of did that distinction for him.
Yeah.
And I think I have a picture of him in his civilian wear at the end. So this is another picture of... Chief Gui, and you can kind of see it's like that very Korean pop boy band streetwear. I love the jacket, and again, it's just so interesting how they sort of mix and match the use of patterns, and that they like just have these giant, it's not even quite camo, it's like this very strange camo colored, but with a weird pattern on the pocket. And then he's wearing these kind of unusual green, like olive overalls underneath. And then paired with the beanie. So very, very streetwear. It's weird because he's supposed to kind of read as a slightly older gentleman in comparison to our main lead who's right behind him. But I almost feel like he's got slightly older, more formal wear than the older police. Mm. But he's also the one that kind of runs around and is always doing a lot of the action. So
right.
I feel like something comfortable was important.
Yeah.
So, of course, this is them talking to the chickens because they're trying to find out what happened to the runaway spirit.
Sure.
Just another close-up of some of the details on the jacket. Like, again, I love that they kind of did a contrast color for all the different details, like the lapel and the pocket cover. Yeah. And just to match with, like, what's underneath. And then he's also got this really lovely blue sweater underneath. And then Kang Bae, he's often in a lot of these kind of longer trench coats, very nice, like, wool trench coats with hoodies, which I always find kind of interesting because it's like he's a grocer, so it's not like he's making a ton of money, but he's got these really nice wool coats, like a lot of them.
Interesting.
okay, so another picture. And I pulled this for a little bit later, but she does wear this outfit again later, not necessarily with this jacket. I think this might have been from earlier in the episode. But again, that recycling of, like, different pieces, because she's still in the same world and it has to be realistic. But yeah. I just love the different kind of coats that they have, and also different use of materials. Like, she's got kind of the wool, and then it looks like he's got almost like windbreaker material.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little heavier, but like a canvas. And then, of course, he's got the kind of bomber and the stripes, striped sweater underneath. So here's another close-up. It's not exactly the same, but this is actually what she's wearing in the episode. And I do love the little kind of Argyle. It's not even really Argyle. It's like a new take on Argyle, which I really love. It's a very unique print.
That's cool.
But I love the pattern on her with everything else being so sleek. I really liked that. And again, she kind of goes back and forth between having the handbook and then having very like almost contemporary menswear, but fashioned in a ladies, in a ladies like styling, which I really loved for her character. Okay, so then this is the ballroom dance that they do at the end for the competition. And she's never really seen in a dress. Like, she's always in these, like, matching, almost 80s, like, jumper sweats. Like, they're, like, sweatshirt and sweatpants that kind of match. She's in a lot of those. And then but I love that this dress is so, like, not her, but that it's also her. Like, she goes through a scene where she tries a bunch of different dresses and, like, none of them seem to fit her personality. And I love that this one is so much more playful, even though it's still not really something she would typically wear, but it's the best fitting for what she would choose.
Yeah.
And then his shirt, and I wasn't able to get a close-up on it, or I didn't include a close-up of it, but I did find an interesting close-up of it. Looks like there's little, almost like little glass tiles. Maybe not glass, but like some reflective tiles that make up this little sparkly print that he's got on his shirt. And it's literally detailed like tiles lined up next to each other. And I think that's what's catching the light. So I thought that was actually really interesting because it was definitely an actual texture on the shirt versus just a glitter that was attached. Okay, so this is after they win the competition. So obviously they win.
Of course.
He gives them one wish, each of them one wish. So I can't remember what the girl wishes for, but basically he wishes for him to come to his house so that he can feed him the magical elixir. So after they win the competition, of course, Kangbei ends up asking the chairman to come to his house for a meal. And so this is obviously with the plan to try and feed him the magical elixir, which you can see in this very obvious bottle here.
Oh my gosh.
But I wanted to pull this picture because I love the kind of earth tone palette that they've created in his home because it's a very homey feel. Again, don't know if that was intentional, but also it's so completely random that they're just in these other outfits because it's very different from what they're wearing the rest of the time. So every scene is such a different outfit. But I love that the police officer is kind of in this like almost like 80s tracksuit. And then, of course, we sort of see her casual because she's about to enter into his dream and try to convince him not to live his life in regret. And then, of course, Kangbei is in his very comfortable. He's always got some sort of hoodie layer or something comfortable underneath all of his jackets. So I do love that they kind of kept him in that consistently. Okay. And then in the final scene, after they've redeemed the spirit and helped him fulfill his dreams and not live life in regret. I wanted to pull this because I just really like this shirt. I love the contrasting sleeve. And this is actually, I believe this is an overall, not an apron. So again, like just the different varying levels of like overalls that he wears. It's a very playful kind of childish look almost, which is a little bit of his personality, but it's also interesting kind of ironic because he's also like the chief of police supposedly in the underworld. And then of course for her, this is just another kind of example of the sort of contemporary matchup of the contemporary cardigan with like, you can kind of see the neck collar of the hanbok underneath. And then of course Kangbei is in his very traditional jumpsuits and sweaters. Or I should say jumpers. Sorry. I always think of British jumpers, but not an actual jumpsuit. But he wears a lot of this in this show.
Yeah.
And then there is the picture at the end. So again, this is our god character. And this is sort of where he's starting to suspect, or he starts realizing that it's his son who's causing all this havoc in the modern day contemporary. And so he's kind of mulling over the dangers that are coming, that are imminent. And so, of course, this is him when he enters the tent, and he's kind of in these darker colors in contrast to his white that we first see him in. And I believe that's my last one.
Cool. That show looks bonkers, but in a good way.
It does. It's a lot to follow, and, like, I really enjoyed it up until the end, but I know they got some criticisms about like how it was really strong in the middle and then it kind of floundered towards the end. But I thought it was very touching, and there's a lot of really like happy moments in the show too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Great job.
Yeah, thank you.
I need to get into K-dramas.
I know. There's so many.
I know.
You can go down a really big rabbit hole once you start.
I'm not like anti-watching stuff with subtitles, but I am a multitasker. So I usually am trying to do something while I watch TV, and I can't do something if I'm reading subtitles. So that's why I just don't watch as many, but I really want. I want to.
That's why I've stopped watching as many as I used to.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I really can't sew while I'm trying to read subtitles.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Sarah, what are you covering?
Okay, so of course I am covering Squid Game.
Yay!
It's the show that took us all by storm last fall, I think, when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Very scary show. Parental warning, it's not for children at all.
Do not show this to your child.
No. like I said, it came out in 2021. It's on Netflix. It's a Netflix show. Directed by... I'm going to screw up all these names. I'm very sorry. Hwang Dong-hyuk. He is the writer and director and basically like the creator of the show. He also did two sort of like drama films called The Fortress and Silenced. But this is really his first really large project that has kind of put him on the map. And he came up with the concept like around 10 years ago, but like nobody wanted it. Because it was like too grotesque and unrealistic, according to Wikipedia. So it took him a while to find like an outlet for the script.
So the costumes,
ironic.
Huh? This is so ironic because it's done so well.
I know. Well, it just really goes to show that like it's all about like right time and like right combination of team, because like I feel like without the actors that they got, it wouldn't be the same show, you know? So it came, it got made when it was meant to get made. So the costumes are by Jo Sung-yong. She also did The Handmaiden, The Host, and Old Boy, which I've heard of all those.
Ooh.
She's been nominated for a lot of like sort of Asian awards, including the Grand Bell Awards, which are a South Korean award. But she was nominated for a CDG award for this, which is awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Nice. And then the show itself got nominated for a ton of Emmys, but didn't win any, which I think is a little insane.
That is really insane.
But it did get a Golden Globe for the old guy who plays player number one, whose name is Oh Young-soo. And then a fun little tidbit is that the show caused a 97% increase in shopping searches online for tracksuits and a 145% increase in white slip-on shoes.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But I mean, it made sense. I was seeing a lot of that right after the show came out.
I know. And it was everybody's Halloween costume.
Yep, absolutely.
So the plot of this, if you haven't seen it, it's basically like a horror suspense show. And it's about sort of this guy whose name is Gi-hun, and he is targeted by this man who is only known as the salesman, who invites him to play this game. And Gi-hun is kind of like a gambler. He's like a deadbeat dad. He's like kind of failed in his life and he's in debt. And the salesman is like, I'll give you money if you play this game with me. And so they play the game, and then he invites him. He gives him a business card and says, call this number if you want to win more money. And so the Gi-hun does that, and he basically gets drugged and put in a van, and he wakes up inside this crazy, like, island fortress with, 450 other people, and they are going to play games to get money, and then it's revealed that they're going to play games to the death for money.
Mm-hmm.
It's deeply upsetting. It's very violent, so... Trigger warning, don't watch it if you can't handle that, because it's a little tough at certain parts, but it's also really good, really well made, and very scary and exciting. So, I actually have a surprising amount of... I thought I was not going to be able to find that much information on the costumes, because I was like, well, you know, who cares about the costumes? Lots of times people really don't care.
it's true.
But I think the tracksuits were became so iconic that people started reaching out to Jo Sung-kyung and asking her about the costuming and stuff. So I think the popularity is the reason why I was able to find so much information.
Right.
Okay. So let's start with, this is Gi-hun on the right, and this is the first outfit we see him in, and he is at, like, the racetrack gambling his mother's money away, which we're like, oh, this guy's probably not that great of a guy. this outfit is kind of nondescript. It's just sort of like a gray blazer with like a mauve-ish t-shirt and like gray jeans and sneakers. And the t-shirt, it has like some stains on it, which makes you think, like, you know, he's a little scattered. He doesn't necessarily take care of himself very well. And he doesn't take care of the people in his life very well either. Mm-hmm. So this is him meeting the salesman in the subway station. And he has also been beat up now by people he owes money to. And mm-hmm. so the contrast between him and the salesman is obviously very vast. It's a very stark contrast because the salesman is in this very crisp, like, charcoal gray suit. And mm-hmm. he looks very clean. And so he's kind of like, he represents like the promise of like, come over here and we'll give you money. And look how shiny and beautiful I am. Like, mm-hmm. don't you want money? He's tempting.
It's a trap.
Yeah, he's a human trap. Mm-hmm. And he's also very handsome.
He's a pretty big Korean actor too. In
that's
a lot
what
of
I heard.
Shows.
Yeah, is that he?
So it's funny that he does such a small carrier role in the yeah. show because he's humongous in a lot of other K dramas.
Okay, that's good to know. I knew that he like people were really into him, and I thought that yeah. he was really popular.
He's the lead in a lot of other K dramas.
That's cool. That it's basically a cameo. Then I like.
Yeah.
Here's a full shot of him in his suit. I would say his pants are a little short, but I think that that's what the fashion kind of is.
I feel like
right
that's
now.
The trend in Korea right now. Like, everything is worn just a little above the ankle.
Just a little bit of a high water.
Yeah.
That actor's name is Gong Yoo. Mm. Yeah. Okay, so this is... Her name is Se-byeok. I'm so sorry. Do my best. She's played by a model slash actress named Ho Yeon, who this is her like her first big actual acting role, which is incredible. She was like previously like a Vogue model and stuff. She's obviously stunningly beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I also think that she is so good in this show. Like, it's crazy to me that this is her first big acting job because she's incredible.
I think there was a whole article. I mean, the cover that she was on for Vogue, that was the first Asian celebrity that was ever on a international magazine
that's
featured. So it was like a big deal that she was the one being featured on the front of Vogue because they never had like an Asian actor be featured on something so big.
That's
so
very like,
that's
sad.
So sad, but also good for her.
Like, yeah, good for her for sure. So this is we first meet her. She basically pickpockets Gi-hun in the subway station or at the racetrack, I can't remember, somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we don't really see much of this outfit, but it's pretty nondescript. It's kind of just like a windbreaker over like a white tee. And I think that it's nondescript for a reason because she is trying to be incognito. You know, she's pickpocketing people, but she also like probably doesn't care about what she looks like because we learn later that she is there's like a real desperation to her because mm-hmm. she is trying to reunite her family and that's like why she needs money. So I think that choosing a nondescript outfit helps us like focus more on like her performance mm-hmm. and her face especially. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, time to talk about tracksuits. Let's get into it. Okay.
All the tracksuits.
So this is a big crowd shot from the first episode of all of the players who have woken up and it's time to play the game. Okay. So I have a lot of notes about this. It's crazy. Okay. Let's see. Where should I start? Okay. So I found a New York Times article that is kind of focuses on like the cultural meaning of these tracksuits. And I learned a lot from it. So I'll link it in the description if people want to read it. Because I'm just going to do a little tidbits from it.
Summary blurb.
Yeah. So tracksuits have become a mark of social status in contemporary Korean culture. And this is according to Joo Young Shin, who is a fashion design professor at Indiana University. And she said that they made her think of this notion of baeksu, which is slang for someone who is out of work. And it translates to white hands, which is like, if you don't work, you have clean hands, basically, because you're idle. Not I-D-O-L, but I-D-L-E. Mm-hmm. You're idle. And so in K-dramas, they call it training book, as in like training suits, track suits. And in K-dramas, a tracksuit is visual shorthand for someone who is like a loser, who is not financially independent, who is like maybe neglected or discriminated against. And so it's a symbol of the life of baeksu, like a lazy person or someone who has been like left behind by society almost. And so they came, that kind of came from like the 70s, because like here, I think in the 70s, leisure suits and tracksuits were when they got popular in the 70s here as well.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of like happening in other places. Mm-hmm. But like nowadays, we don't necessarily think of them as, they're kind of tacky, you know, and like a little outdated and retro. So let's see here. I just have so many notes.
It's good, though.
Yeah.
I'm glad that Korean shows are getting the appreciation that they deserve.
Agreed. Yeah. And I really appreciated that this article was out there so that I could learn a little bit more about the cultural meaning of the clothes that are in this. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Someone else, I deleted who actually this is saying this, but this, it's another expert. They talked to a bunch of experts in like fashion and stuff. And someone said that with a school or company logo, the tracksuit could be a symbol of envy, but without one, you might be looked down upon. So it's almost like in the 2000s when like Juicy sweatsuits were popular, but they were only popular if they were by Juicy, and it was kind of like a conspicuous consumption, like mark of wealth kind of thing. And then also, the art director of this show noted that the green is a reference to something called Saemal Undong, the New Village Movement, which was, it took place in the 70s, and it was a push to build housing infrastructure and modernize Korea. It was pushed by the president of Korea at the time. And the flag for that movement is green. So it's like this color of green is really associated with that movement, which is really interesting because it kind of became associated with like public service personnel.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But it says, despite improving the overall standard of living, Saemal Undong was a political system that directed the rural people to just follow the government's directions to contribute to the economy, and it involved a certain amount of coercive erasure of cultural traditions. So it was like they were taking sort of like the dirt roads away or the thatched roof huts away and like modernizing, but there's a certain amount of erasure that comes with that. So it's also very interesting that, like, they put it on these people who, like, also are, they're having their personhood taken away and they're just, like, being given a set of instructions and they have to follow the instructions or they literally die.
Yeah. It is truly, like, a human erasure.
Yeah. So I thought that was so interesting that it, like, ties into that. And then
very well thought out.
Right? It was like there's layers and layers of meaning to this. And then also, the costume designer said that the tracksuits were commonly sold in supply stores in front of schools in the past, and they were worn by kids back in the day for, like, field day. So, like, kids in, like, sort of, like, back in the day in the 70s would remember wearing stuff like this when they had to go play games in field day. So it also ties back to, like, that all the games they're made to play are games from their childhood that have been sort of bastardized into these really violent games.
So many levels.
You didn't expect that on this episode, did
I
you?
Know. Surprise.
Oh, so it's so crazy. And then also
The prisoners wear green and the guards wear pink, and that obviously red and green are opposite each other on the color wheel, so they look really contrasting to each other on screen. Mm-hmm. And they chose pink instead of like red or anything else because pink is sort of associated with like fairy tales or childhood. So that ties back to sort of like the childhood references that are happening. So yeah, I was like,
Blows me away. Like the level of thought that goes into like every detail of this. I mean, even though it's a repeat costume over and over again, like
And
it almost gives you more time to like focus in on the detail.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was a little bit worried. I was like, am I going to have anything to talk about? And then I start Googling and I was like, oh, I have too much to talk about.
All the notes.
Yeah. I mean, when I first saw this, I thought like, oh, you know, tracksuits or something. Like, I don't know how big their budget was. It seems like it was pretty big, but like it's easy to get in like hundreds and hundreds of duplicates. And it's distinctive. Like the green color is very distinctive, but like, I just didn't know that it carried that much sort of like cultural weight and meaning. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I have a couple pictures of people in the games. So this is, of course, our friend whose name is Sebyok from earlier. She's played by the model that we talked about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's her same her. She's like just wearing her uniform that they gave her. And then this is Doksu, number 101, and he's the gangster guy. Mm-hmm. And he has a face tattoo. And I thought also this is a good opportunity to talk about tattoos and what they represent in different cultures. So, like, obviously, a few generations ago, tattoos were associated with, like, criminals or in America, definitely they're associated with, like, only the military would have them, like, because they would get them overseas and stuff. Mm-hmm. But in Korea, tattooing is actually illegal unless you have a medical license. So it's because they've categorized it as a medical procedure because their reasoning is that it's like unsafe unless it's done by somebody who knows medicine, which is obviously not true because people get tattoos every day by people who aren't doctors and we're all fine. Mm-hmm. It has like a stigma in Korea as well. They really heavily associate it with like a gang activity. And then like going way, way back, criminals would be tattooed with their crime on like a really visible part of their body. So it like visually told people that you were a criminal, literally. Mm-hmm. And so obviously there's like a push. There's a push by the current generations to like get rid of those stigmas. More and more young Korean people are getting tattoos and it's becoming more normal. It's still technically illegal. So most of the tattooing that happens there is done illegally, which is crazy.
Interesting.
But I think especially a face tattoo. So this guy has snake going up his neck and like ending on his chin. I think that especially a face tattoo is automatically going to make people think that you are a criminal. When I see people with face tattoos, I usually assume they're either like a musician, a tattoo artist, or a criminal. But I think in South Korea, it's probably mostly criminal that people. Mm-hmm. And he's like a gangster. So it makes sense. So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting, too. These are things that like watching it as an American person, you might not pick up on. But it has extra layers of meaning if you know about like South Koreans.
And I will say when I watch this, like I'm not sure how I felt about the placement of this, because I also couldn't tell it was a snake at first. Like, I was just kind of like, why does he just have a really long, like, dick on his face? but again, it's sort of, you know what I mean? Like, if you're looking really carefully at it, of course, you'll see that it's a snake. But, like, when you're just seeing him walking around, it's kind of like, it's a really very strange placement for a giant long tattoo like that to be on your face.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, who made that decision, because I feel like any good tattoo artist would be like, this doesn't really make a ton of sense with your anatomy. You know, like, it has to flow with your body.
Yeah, it doesn't even follow his, like, chin direction. Like, it doesn't follow the actual jawline. Like, it kind of is, like, right above it.
You're absolutely right, yeah. Yeah,
it's but yes, kind of awkward. That definitely, placed. It bothered me for the first, like, couple of minutes, and then I was like, okay, I guess that's just his character, but I couldn't stop staring at it, because it was so weird.
I feel like if it, like, kind of curved and came up onto his cheek, it would be a little better.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was maybe just the shape and the placement, and I was like,
It is a little phallic, you're right.
Yeah. Just a little bit. That's funny.
So here's Gi-hun in his tracksuit, and this is during the game. So this obviously I'm covering just the first episode. So this first episode ends with them playing red light, green light, and everybody who moves gets shot, and it's deeply upsetting.
Yes.
I will also say that the green is effective in such a violent show because blood is also red. So
that contrast.
So here is them in sort of like amongst the scenery. This set is like also bananas. And we can see here like the pink and pastel colors. Oh, they also said that like these sort of light colors were used a lot in schools back in the day in Korea. Mm-hmm. So like these people who are playing this game in the world of the show would associate this all with being in school and being a kid, which is also like makes it doubly
deeply disturbing.
Twisted. Yeah. So disturbing. Okay, so this is his character's name is the front man, which I don't know if they ever say that in the show, but I found it out on IMDb. And he wears this. Let's look at the mask first. He wears this like crazy faceted mask that I think is really interesting. There's a lot of masks in this show amongst the people who are running the game. So they said that. I think they just said that this one was kind of inspired by Darth Vader, this mask, which obviously if you look at it, if you look at it, you're like, well, it doesn't look like Darth Vader, but I can see how the inspiration is there because it's dark. And then also it has like humanoid features on it that we recognize as almost human, but they're not human enough for it to seem lifelike to us. Right. So Darth Vader's is like that, too. And then his outfit is kind of just like this hooded coat and then regular slacks that are in the same fabric as the coat. And I like that it has literally no like surface detail of any kind. If it has buttons, they're hidden. It might be like a zipper or magnets or something under there.
It almost looks like they folded the lapel down instead of leaving it back.
Yeah, it does kind of make that curve shape.
Yeah, only on one side, though.
Yeah.
I love that curve.
I think it's effective because it draws all of your attention to the mask whenever he's on screen. And then here's just another shot of it. I grabbed a couple different shots because it, like, it looks different because it's faceted. It depends on, like, where the light is hitting it, which I think is also really cool.
I know it's cool because even with the color surrounding it, like, you can't – I thought I remembered it being more black in the actual show, but like now looking at it, it almost looks gold. So it's cool.
It is black, but I will say the other cool thing is that the lighting. So like the production design has obviously been really well thought out because it looks gold, but it's because the lighting in his like office is all gold.
Yeah.
As opposed to this, which is like very bright, cool white lighting in the rest of the. In like the players' areas, it's all very like almost like fluorescent looking. So yeah, super cool. Okay, so here is the robot doll.
So crazy.
Of our nightmares. So I grabbed this not because I want to talk about her clothes, but because it was apparently inspired by a character named Younghee, who appeared on the covers of Korean textbooks. Called Chulso and Younghee in the 1970s and 1980s. So it's once again something that the people playing the game might recognize from their past and associate with being a kid. And then she kills you. Oh, yes. Yeah. From my notes, it says the use of this familiar character was meant to juxtapose memories of childhood and unsettling fear in the players. And then here's Younghee right here. I have a picture. Cute.
Terrifying. She looks so innocent there.
Poor Younghee. Now she's going to be associated with this murdering robot doll forever. Okay. And so then last, I'm just going to talk about the guards. So scroll. Okay. So I found an article on Pop Sugar that I got most of this guard information from. Apparently, originally, the costume designer wanted to dress the guards in sort of Boy Scout-inspired costumes, but she said that it showed too much of their body, and she really wanted something that would, like, hide their human figure as much as possible. because they wanted them, it said over and over that they wanted them to look like ants in a colony. Oh, which is, I can see.
Yeah, definitely.
Apparently, the masks went through a lot of different iterations, and she worked with the art director on designing the masks. Mm-hmm. So it was a collaboration. She said they tried animals, different animals for different ranks.
Yeah.
And then they ended up using those for the guys at the end of the show, the mm-hmm. rich guys who come. And they ended up with something that is a combination of, like, fencing masks and then something called Hahotal masks, which are traditional ceremonial masks that have, like, a hinged articulated jaw. And these ones, like, okay. fold up. So I think that that's where that came from.
Interesting.
Okay. So the ant colony thing, she said, when looking at an ant colony from a distance, it's impossible to tell the bugs apart. But within the colony, the different ants have different jobs. So that's kind of what this is that the symbol on the mask denotes their rank. But, like, from afar, they all look the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the circles are for the workers, the lowest tier, who, like, are in charge of, like, taking the bodies away. The triangles mm-hmm. are worn by the guards who have, like, the guns. And then the squares are managers who are sort of the overseers of everybody else. And the symbols for them are taken from the Hangul characters for the abbreviation OJM, which is, like, an abbreviation of the Romanized title. So it's like a combination of English and Korean, and then they like simplified those symbols into these little symbols, which I think was interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Is that all I have? Yeah, and it's just so
is
much.
Is that all?
Is that all? Is that the TED Talk I've done? Is that it? Yeah, that's pretty much it. So
fascinating.
I was like so excited to find all of that information because we've talked about it before where we're like, I think I'm sure that there was some sort of intentional decision being made here, but I don't know exactly what it is. So now we know the intentionality right. of all those costumes.
So crazy. I know. It's like, really, there's two major costumes that yeah. are in this show.
Yeah.
But like so much power and meaning behind them. It's pretty yeah, great.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yay.
Woohoo. So that's Squid Game. That was our episode on Korean shows. Oh my gosh. Much fun.
There's so many more, of course, out there. But
of course, yeah.
Yeah, we definitely covered some fun ones. So yes, if you are not a K-drama person, I mean, the nice thing is with K-dramas, they end in like 16 to 20 episodes, generally speaking.
Oh, nice.
And like, usually there's not, I mean, there's not always a sequel. Squid Game apparently is getting a sequel.
Yeah. But
just because it did so well, so it makes sense. But the nice thing is they usually kind of end it very well rounded and you don't feel like you have to suck your life into, you know, six seasons of whatever show.
Yeah. 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 The ending of Squid Game is open-ended. And I saw that the creator said that they went back and forth on like how to end it. But he was like, I felt like to honor the overall theme of the show, it needed to be an open-ended like question mark.
Yeah.
Like it could go either way kind of thing.
Yeah. Although I definitely at the end was kind of like, why? Why would you do that?
Well, because he's like
after everything you went through.
Spoiler alert. But like he sees the salesman with someone else. Right. And I think that like in the next season, he could be potentially trying to save people from the Squid
Game. That's true. I was like, I guess if you're going back to save, it's a little different. Like, because at first it kind of just looks like he's like, I got to get back in.
Oh,
I'm like, wait, no, don't do this. You just went through all of that and came out alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Spoiler alert, Ki-hoon is the only survivor. It's so upsetting.
It is. I was like, oh.
I was rooting for the girl, honestly. I was like, I want her.
Me too.
Yeah.
I was hoping at least at the end that they would just be like, surprise, we're letting two people go.
Yeah, that would be great.
So crazy. But yes. Well, thanks, Sarah. That was fun.
Yeah, good suggestion for the theme. Loved
Definitely.
It.
Definitely. I know, you for the first episode of this month as well.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening, and please rate and review us.
Yes, please do.
On our Instagram. And if you have any comments or questions or things you want to add to what we've said, please feel free to reach out. We love hearing from our listeners.
We really do. It makes us very happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, and looking forward to the next month's episodes.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye. See you on the next one.
thank you for listening to The Costume Plot. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Costume Plot. If you have a question, comment, or a movie suggestion, you can email us at thecostumeplot@gmail.com.
Our theme music is by Jesse Tim, and our artwork is by Jojo Siu. Please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts.